We'll be delivering a model to contractors to build. Here's a model. Well, it all starts with that capturing of survey data, right? So if we can automate that, bring it into the model quickly, and then have some machine learning added to that, we see that it's the next frontier for our industry.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm joined by Joe Pizzuro, Senior Vice President and Northeast Regional Manager at VHB. Joe, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Eric.
So for those of you that have seen an episode before, we always start with good news and gratitude. So I'm going to ask Joe, is there any professional or personal good news or gratitude you'd like to share with me in the audience?
Sure, yeah. Super excited this week because my two girls are home from college. So just spending some time, my wife and I, just thankful for them and for us to all be together. It's tough being an empty nester out there if you go through that at some point in your life. But super thankful for that. And then also we're practicing my family, my two girls, my wife. We're going to walk the Camino, if any of you heard of that. It's in Spain and France. So we're going to walk the last 100 kilometers of the Camino or the Way this summer for about a week. So looking forward to that. So it's kind of a pilgrimage kind of walk you do with family and friends. And just to get away from our day-to-day and reflect on all the good things that have happened to us. So yeah, I want to share that.
That's amazing. I'm trying to like do backwards math here. If 5 kilometers is a 3.1 mile, you're doing about a 60 mile walk there. That's like
about. Yeah, we're going to do it about 6 or 7 days. Hopefully take our time and enjoy the views and the vistas and be in the mountains and stuff like that.
That sounds amazing. And so it crosses between Spain and France?
Yeah, I mean, the full Camino, which would take you about a month, maybe a month and a little bit more, is 800 kilometers or 500 miles.
Wow.
Right? So we're just doing the last 100 kilometers. You finish at this very famous church called Santiago de Compostela. It's a saint called St. James, and people have been walking for pilgrimage reasons since the beginning of time and finishing at this church. So it's pretty cool. You should look into it if you're interested in walking. It's just a way to get outside and enjoy things and clear your head if you have to.
I love stuff like that. That sounds amazing. And the vistas has got to be beautiful over there. Very, very cool. And to your point about being an empty nester, I guess I always like to share good news and gratitude too. I'm going to go the opposite end of the spectrum. I'm nowhere close to an empty nester. I have a young baby daughter. She's amazing, but today she was not feeling well. And yesterday she's just been a little under the weather. And so my gratitudes to my wife are really like taking the brunt of that and being there for her and just being so amazing. So family is good. And I know, Joe, you know a lot of my family. So.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And I hope you enjoy the rest of the week with your daughters at home. Let's jump into a little bit about you. You know, in a couple of minutes or less, tell me about yourself, like your background. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? Any hobbies or things you like to do outside of work?
I grew up in Westchester County in New York in a town called Peekskill, if anybody's ever heard of that.
Yeah.
It's kind of upper Westchester. A great governor was there, George Pataki, came out of Peekskill. But that's where I grew up. I didn't go very far. I live in southern Westchester now in the Mamaroneck, Larchmont area. So pretty much lived in Westchester County my whole life. I went to school. I thought I was going to be an architect first. I went to two-year school, State University of New York, SUNY, Delhi. Got a two-year degree in architecture. That's where I learned a lot of good things about manual drafting back then. I mean, I'm not that old. But I started out manual drafting and learning AutoCAD at the same time. So that was pretty cool. But then I knew I should be an engineer because I couldn't make anything like look good from a freehand sketch standpoint or coloring or shading, but I can make things stand up. So I said, oh, I must be an engineer. So I went on to SUNY Buffalo and got my engineering degree. And then I graduated in 1995. Wasn't the best time for engineers. Really hard to find a job. But I did find one at a company called Distro. That's where I started my career in the summer of 95. And my first boss was Dave Botte. If anybody know him out there, he's a great person, great leader, great manager. I started off as a track engineer doing geometry, horizontal, vertical profiles, fitting things between columns and bridges. And I've just always had a love and passion for bridges. So I went on and did a lot of railroad bridge design after that, bridge inspection. Then that led me into the structures world, and I did lots of train station design, tear down replacement of platforms and canopies and elevator shafts and pedestrian bridges. Really liked that stuff. I was a really good project manager. I could bring people together, all disciplines, and do good designs. And then I kind of fell into what's called the rail systems world after that. So took my track and structures experience and applied some good project management with signal power communications for railroad work, like doing the interlocking reconfigurations and reconfiguring tracks and power and signal type stuff. So I'm kind of a well-rounded civil sense and just really good at bringing people together. Started off doing calculations and a project engineer, project manager, department manager. And then when I came to VHB about 3 years ago, ran the New York City office, really wanted to do that. And now I'm running the region, which is New York and New Jersey combined. We're about 300 folks in the region and about five offices as well comprised in the region. But one of the things I'm really passionate about is just bringing back the business of engineering to our profession. You know what I mean? I'm passionate about that. Engineer first, business person second. Didn't really teach you a lot of business in engineering school, Eric, but I'm kind of learning on the job. So just applying that and bringing that passion to the industry.
That's very cool. It's such a small industry. I had no idea you and David worked together in such a way. And David's such a great guy. So that's just good information for me to know, I guess. I think that's cool. And appreciate you going through the history of this. You really have touched like a lot of different types of projects and work. And as someone that also went to engineering school, I totally echo that they don't teach you how to run a business in engineering school.
Not even close. Yeah.
They teach you a lot. They teach you a lot of good stuff, but that's not the tools in the toolbox there. So yeah. Towards the end there, you started talking about like your new role, right? And congrats again. I'm sure it's very exciting at VHB. Tell me like, what's like the day to day? And maybe even if you don't mind, like kind of give us a comparison, right? From when you were early on as like, let's call it a field engineer or even like working design in the office to your day today. What do you do today, day to day?
Yeah, I mean, day to day right now, I'm working with, and every organization has different titles, but you know, when someone leads an office or an organization, so I'm really leading and managing people that run all our offices. So we call those people managing directors. So I'm working with the managing directors to deliver on a day-to-day basis, really the business plan that we set forth last September, October timeframe, where we look at the revenue we think we're going to generate based upon what we have in backlog, what we've won to date, what we plan to win in the future year, and just pushing that along. That's kind of the day-to-day, making sure that we're delivering our projects on time, relatively within budget, plus or minus. We don't have a lot of project losses, so we can kind of hit the, we call it income from operations after everything that's left, right? It's your operating income, right? They don't teach that in school for sure, right? I can't believe I'm up here telling you about it, but that's what we kind of commit to the organization, that we're going to run this business and we're going to contribute some operating income, aka profit, to give back to our people, to our shareholders, et cetera, and things like that. So that's kind of the day-to-day. And then it's also working with our market leaders so that they're the ones out there trying to be visible and position ourselves to win future work and working on our strategies. That's what I call the secondary horizon for us. Like horizon one is the day-to-day, Eric. Horizon two is working our strategic plan. Where do we want to be strategically this year? Not just from a generating revenue standpoint, but the types of work, the types of clients we want to be working with and win work with. And then also hitting our objectives for the year. We set out to three or five objectives that we want to get done this year within the region, within each office, and really just looking at those. Where are we from each month that goes by? Did we hit that interior milestone that we wanted to hit? to achieve this objective by the end of the year, or do we have to make up some ground? And then just looking out 3 to 5 years, you know, we're at VHB, we're put together a 5-year strategic plan. We're in the second year of that. And then how are we advancing our pathway to meeting those objectives that are 3, 5, or 7 years down the road? So that's kind of my day-to-day as a regional manager. It's kind of a mixed bag. I call it like 3 horizons, the 1, 2, and 3.
It's very cool. And it's always nice to hear, like, even at a big firm, that the outlook is similar to the way we look at things. And for a smaller business like mine, like, our greatest challenge is we have like our day-to-day ops, right? Like what you considered your first horizon. And that ends up eating up so much time. But you have to find a way to make some time to look at the second horizon and the third horizon. Because if you just get consumed in day-to-day, that's all you'll ever do. And it becomes very difficult to meet long-term objectives or long-term goals. Do you have a, you know, I don't know, either a framework, or how do you like help your, I think you said they're managing directors, right? The office leads. How do you help your managing directors maybe see that? Like, hey, you guys got to be creating time for the 3 to 5 year vision, even though I know like the day-to-day ops is probably just taking up most of your time.
Yeah, I mean, it's meeting with them, number one, having normal check-ins with them. I meet with those managing directors once a week for 30 minutes minimum, just to kind of check in. But it's also just showing them that they need to push down the day-to-day to their folks that are reporting to them. So it's, for me, I'm pushing it down to the managing directors to worry about the day-to-day, but then they're pushing it down to their directors in each kind of like service area. You could look at it so that they're more managing the day-to-day, and then they're even pushing it down maybe one more level. So you got to kind of get into that thinking and that level of thinking so that you can make the time to think about down the road for you, because I remind them all the time, we could just focus on the day-to-day, have really good numbers, right? But you're going to wake up 6 months from now and you're not going to have any work. And then they're like, whoa, that doesn't sound very good. I mean, I'm trying to make a point. But that's what happens sometimes. You get stuck in the day-to-day, or you win a big job. Everybody's heads are down. They don't have the time to devote to strategic thinking or positioning to win, you know, that future work. And so it does happen, but you got to remind folks, hey, take an hour, take 2 hours, whatever, 4 hours this week, and think about what's next. It's very important.
I'd like to believe my direct reports, my executive team, all listen to the podcast, but if they don't, I'm going to make sure they listen to this segment, because this is a constant conversation. We talk about like delegate to elevate, right? I was a victim of this for a long time in the business. I did everything, right? Or like I did everything with help. Today, I do far less and I have other people lead. And there's a big difference between having a leader and a helper, you know, and just even understanding that was such a big mindset shift for me.
That takes time for a person to grow, number one, to be able to trust and delegate to others, Eric.
Yeah.
And not everybody always gets that. And then you can't micromanage them. You have to let them lead the way they want to lead. You know what I mean? And yes, they're going to make mistakes, but that's how they're going to learn. Just like we all learn, by making mistakes.
We're not perfect, but we are better for the mistakes we made, for sure. Very cool. So let's talk a little bit more about VHB here. So tell us a little bit about the firm. I know towards the end of you telling us about your background, you were discussing how you were becoming rail and transit focused. Is that the VHB focus, or what is the VHB focus like?
Yeah. VHB, we're a little bit different than I would say a lot of our competitors or similar firms out there. Yes, rail and transit is a piece of what we do, but we're more like a well-rounded kind of firm. We don't just work in the public infrastructure area. We work for private companies. Really, our public sector area falls into 2 or really 3 markets. At VHB, it's a transportation market, which is all of transportation. So it's rail, highway, aviation, right? Planes, trains, and automobiles, in a sense, right? We work for what we call state and local governments. So your counties, your municipalities, your townships in certain areas. And then we also work for the federal government. So those kind of fall into the kind of public works sectors, in a sense. But then we also work in 3 other markets. The real estate market, where we work for private developers, developing buildings, commercial, housing, residential type projects up and down the East Coast. And then our institutional market, when we say institutions, it's healthcare, hospitals, and higher education, universities, and things like that. We do similar things. We help them develop land or land development type of projects. And then the energy market, where we're also working in the energy market, where we've permitting and planning for offshore wind, which is not very hot right now. It's kind of cooled down a little bit with the new administration, right? We've worked in that area also in solar, and then also in just private utilities, transmission lines, towers, substations. So we're a little bit different. I would say that our revenue in the whole firm is kind of a 50-50 split between public and private work. And that enables us to talk to both sides. So say you're working for a public works client and you have a private client adjacent to you developing something, we can certainly talk between both of those types of owners and clients and know the nuances for permitting, for environmental, for engineering. You know, I could go on and on and on. So it makes us in a little bit different position, which I really like. And when you look at it from a business sense, I know I'm going on here, from a business sense, public and private's going to be always up and down. They're never going together on the same cycle. So if you put a line through that, you're generally going to have a good bulk of work, steady stream of work that could kind of keep you working in good times or bad times in public or private. So I want to share that a little bit about VHB as well. So a little bit different from maybe some of the firms that you've worked with or talked with or had on your podcasts.
And that was one of the reasons I wanted to give you an opportunity to say that. And I'm going to forget the name of the event, but you guys do a great like vendor outreach. What do you call those events, Joe? I came to one. I think you guys just did one in Newark like last week.
Yeah, we call it business to business or B2B. Yeah. We just did one in our Newark space just last week, actually, last Thursday. Yeah. But we've done them in New York City a couple of times where we invite firms that are interested to get to know us better and us to get to know them. And it's a really good event. And we walk around, we talk to everybody, we switch it up and try to meet everybody, make new connections.
Yeah, those events are great. And the reason I was just mentioning that was I got to learn a lot more about VHB at the event I went to, specifically on how much like private work the firm does. And I didn't know that. And similar to what you were saying, predominantly in our industry, the firms that are doing public works are doing public works, you know, and the firms that are doing private development or private work are doing private work. And we're very similar to you guys in terms of having a split, except for like we've had this, like we were 100% private work. And that was probably for a solid like 8 to 10 years. We really rode that wave. It was great. We had a ton of work. But I started to see, you know, it wasn't going to be all sunshine and rainbows. And we pivoted to public work. And so the company has continued to grow during the entire, like that entire tenure. But now we're like probably like 80% public. And I'm really trying to find that, like what you just described, that like 50-50. And for two reasons. One is we're very good in both places and the clients we work with love working with us. But the second part is what you just described, right? Like there's an ebb and a flow to funding. And typically they're off cycle of each other. So you want to keep in between both of them, because when one is a little slow, the other one's going to be hot. And that just seems to be the way that the economy works. I appreciate you giving us a little insight into VHB. And so then the question that comes to my mind after learning that much about is like, you know, what you impact the average person in so many different facets, right? You're not just doing their public works, right? So maybe you're doing their commute to work, whatever that is, right? Whether it's rail transit or highway or tunnel or bridge. But then potentially on the private side, you're also impacting their experience in a commercial office building or their residence, you know, wherever they're living. So what does that feel like to you? Like just to know that you touch so many different points of a person's like daily experience.
It feels great, number one, to have that impact in people's lives, Eric. I mean, I predominantly grew up on the public work side and rail and transit. So I kind of had that really good feeling about moving people by mass transportation and taking them off of the highways that had a lot of traffic and things like that. And just knowing that you could get between points A and B at a certain time rather than an unknown time by hitting traffic. But now since coming to VHB, it's really opened my eyes in those other areas that you described, whether it be commercial development, affordable housing, or just housing in general that we know we have a great shortage of in this tri-state area. And then also the hospitals and healthcare and all those things that to make people's lives better if they're sick or they have an ailment, or just how you drive up to an emergency room or a clinic or emergency care or whatever you're going to, right? A lot of thought goes into that for the customer experience. It's like taking trains or planes or automobiles, but now it's like you're transcending that into a different space, going to a store or going home after working all day, or if you have to go to the hospital or get some healthcare, or even go to the university. I would have never known until now that civil engineers or planners or scientists, right, lay out universities. I mean, yeah, assume they did. But you're making impacts for students and faculty as well, you know, and having that experience as they come up to the campus and making their studying better because of the way that they travel between buildings. So many things that were impacting just the daily lives of folks. And it just feels great. It does.
And I agree with you. And, you know, earlier I mentioned my family. So, you know, my dad kind of raised us on that tenet. You know, it was like, we're called civil engineers because we allow civilization to function. Like, the clean water does not just happen. Like, there's a lot of time, energy, effort taken to deliver clean water to your residence, to your office, to the bathroom. Plumbing doesn't just have so many things we could go on and on about.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
You talked about how you touch so many different people. I mean, do you have like a personal story or anecdote that like maybe a project you worked on where, you know, someone, you just realized how you impacted someone like individually or personally, even if it's yourself? I feel impacted by projects we work on all the time. I feel excited that we do new projects.
I'll give you a couple quick stories. So I was doing lots of train stations when I was younger. And one of them that we won where I was it's Larchmont Station. It's on a New Haven line. It's the next stop after New Rochelle, right? So we did a whole rehabilitation, replaced the station building. We did a new overpass, elevators, made it ADA compliant, right? The next thing I knew is I moved to that town. So now I'm commuting through this station that I designed and was part of the construction. So that felt pretty good, like personally, but I know that even more it impacted folks, for those to take elevators or just to have a station building to go to wait in the winter, grab a cup of coffee. Those things were really good. But for me personally, I've commuted through that station now for like 20 years. So that feels really good. But then another impact station I worked on was Yankee Stadium train station for Metro North on the Hudson Line. There's the subways there, but Metro North goes really close to that. So they decided to do a train station there. And I went to games after I designed that station. I was the resident engineer during construction for that. And just the impact that made for people going to the game, just to get home easier, not be in traffic or on a packed subway car. That to me was another kind of game changer that just impacts so many people's lives. And then the station is sized for that. I always say that walk-off bottom of the ninth home run by a Yankee, right? So it's a little bit oversized for everyday use, but it's oversized for that situation. So it makes sense. That's another good project of mine. But another one I worked on was for the Long Island Railroad. It was a Jamaica capacity improvement. And we designed a new platform on the south side that's in operation now. It's kind of takes you to Brooklyn, to Brooklyn Shuttle. And just that was just an amazing project in itself to help speed up some capacity through Jamaica. We made lots of improvements there. And now I see people hanging out in that western overpass that I've never seen before because they're waiting for their connections. So it's kind of like it's allowing people to communicate and get to know each other more than in the past in Jamaica anyway. So that was like a human connection enhancement as well. So yeah, pretty good stuff.
As a Yankee fan, love all things positive for the Yankees. So thank you for bringing that up. I think it's probably so unique to have moved to where you worked on a project. I assume during the course of the project, you didn't know that one day you'd be moving to that area. And then it's funny you bring up the Jamaica capacity only because I remember I was taking a train to the city and I guess I transferred to Jamaica and I ran into you there. And I was like, oh, hey Joe, where are you going? You're like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm here.
I'm working here.
That's funny. Very cool. So you talked about a lot of great projects there. One of the things that I'd like to touch on is innovation, or, you know, even you, it sounds like you have a passion for engineering, or like even just engineering solutions, right? Is there anything you've like recently implemented or done that you were like, that was so innovative, I'm so glad to have been part of that, or I can't believe we thought of that or created that, you know, anything you want to talk about?
At VHB, we're into technology, right? That's the next frontier. I spoke briefly, I'm just giving context. When I started out in this profession, I learned manual drafting at the same time, computer-aided drafting or CAD or AutoCAD, right? Now technology is going to be driving lots of stuff. There's AI. We're talking about out there machine learning to teach an AI to do something better and better than maybe some of us. But at VHB, we're into that. We're promoting that into our work and being innovative. One of the things we do is we do a lot of LiDAR scanning. We have a backpack scanner that we can physically put it on our back, and our folks walk around the space and get the LiDAR imagery as well as still images and video as well that helps us to design stuff, make a digital twin, right? We call it reality capture because we're capturing something and making it a reality, right? A lot of people call it digital twin, but we want to take that to the next level. We want to take that information and stick it into a model. And we all talk about this model-based design. That's the next frontier. That's what I'm getting at. So instead of delivering 2D plans, right, PDFs now, we've been doing for years, not so much paper, we'll be delivering a model to contractors to build. Here's a model. Well, it all starts with that capturing of survey data, right? So if we can automate that, bring it into the model quickly, and then have some machine learning added to that, we see that it's the next frontier for our industry. You know what I mean? It's not going to replace people. It's going to allow us to do more than we do today. We all know there's a shortage of engineers in this country, has been for a while, but there's a lot of things that we need to fix, right? And build or rebuild. This is only going to help us do that more than we are today with the people that we have. So we're implementing that on a lot of our projects. We're that firm that's taken that bigger leap than maybe others. We don't want to be the ones waiting around because we might be left behind in a sense. You hear that, but it's coming and it's going to come to our industry and impact us. So we're employing that on our projects currently, trying to implement that and still doing it the ways that we were taught, whether it's 2D, designing in 3D and still making plans, right? But that is what we're doing. And whether it's a state of good repair type of project, a new design in addition to something, a modification to something, can all be implemented in this type of innovative techniques that we're trying to employ and start.
Very cool. And I was actually at the CMAA conference at CMAA Focus. There was a session like LiDAR and a lot of what you talked about. I know accuracy varies, but one of my takeaways from that was they were talking about how the iPhone, one of the cameras on the iPhone, like you might have four cameras or three cameras, one of them is actually a LiDAR scanner.
Yeah.
And they showed us how they walk through a filled station. So there's public all over the place. And then also that the camera can remove the people. And so all you get is the structural elements it's amazing what the technology can do. And it sounds like you guys are really utilizing it.
Yeah.
And are you finding the clients are accepting of that? They're excited by that? Or I know sometimes we have a challenge with clients to, hey, we want to try something new here.
I mean, the biggest thing for us is that you go and scan and LiDAR your site really one time and you pick up everything. So the days of, I got to go back and resurvey or I missed this or I didn't pick that up. That's a game changer right there. And then there's a lot of post-processing that's still going on, which collect the data, but even that's getting faster and even AI can help with that down the road. You know what I mean? So I feel the clients are embracing it because then they have this snapshot of their asset for a while until they make changes to it, right? So it's, you know how we drop the little Google Earth guy down on the map?
Yeah.
And you get to see and spin around. That's how life is going to be, in my opinion. This isn't VHB's opinion. That's how life's going to be for all our infrastructure. When we go underground, everything's going to be tied together at some point, man, and we'll be able to just drop the little Google guy down there and take a look at things.
Very cool. And I know you mentioned digital twin, and we don't have all the time to talk about it, but I've seen some digital twin case studies, amazing what they're able to do and how they're working. And I agree with you. I do think clients are becoming more receptive to new ideas. And I think what you just said there is a big reason why they're starting to understand that it helps them in the long run, right? And that's really great to see. So clients are one part of who we have to talk to or work with. The other less spoken about is like our policymakers, right? And I just wanted to touch with you. You have this breadth of regional experience, obviously worked on a lot of high profile projects. What should public officials, policymakers be doing today to ensure like the long-term success of our region, right? Predominantly, it's going to be transportation-based, but there's a lot of new development, a lot of things we talked about, even offshore wind. We're part of the program at the South Brooklyn Marine Terminal. It's a great program, but that's kind of been, not that program is no challenges, but like other programs like it have been curbed. You mentioned earlier about this current administration maybe not being as helpful, but in general, what do you see as public officials, policymakers should be doing today to ensure the long-term viability of the region?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, they need to have kind of a bigger voice. We could start there, right? They need to voice the concerns. But in order to do that, they need to know really what the conditions are of all the assets, whether it's transportation, healthcare, universities, commercial, housing, whatever. We need to do a better job of just laying out what do we need to fix, right? And how much it's going to cost, right? Then we really need to think about how we're going to move people in this region, right? Right now, a lot of us are reliant on cars, buses, trains, whatever, subway, right? And it gets really congested in the area. So maybe we got to take a look at what have other countries done, Eric? I go to Europe once a year for summer vacation. I know I'm on vacation and it's different, but like they have some of that figured out. You know what I mean? Like people aren't going in the car, you know, they're taking a train, they're taking a bus, they're taking a bicycle, they're hopping in an electric car or what have you, and things that are not theirs. So they're not relying on getting to point A to B in their own personal vehicles. I think we need to look at that from a policy standpoint, right? Because you can't just build more lanes of highway. It's not going to work, right? Yeah. We see that in California. We saw it here already. We see it in highly densely populated, congested areas. So maybe we got to take a look at, you know, our European folks and people in Asia and things like that. And maybe they got it figured out. You know what I mean? And so we should really start thinking about how we want to move around from a movement standpoint and getting around goods and services. And we have lots of water. We could use water to get around. A lot of countries do that, whether it's boats, barges, whatever, water taxis. We can move a lot of people that way as well. And other countries do. So I feel that they got to do some different studies and policy making and really looking to the future. Because as our population grows, it's more people to move, more people to live. There's more water, like you talked about earlier, electricity, right? So you really got to crunch all of that information and put it together. That's what I think.
A lot of good points. To your point about Europe and this goes back a long time because I was in college, so I don't know how true it is like anymore. But when they had first started high-speed rail, they had started to create maps that showed time distance between two locations rather than like physical distance between two locations. And I found that to be amazing because like I'm in Long Island. I could be driving to my father-in-law's 40 miles away and it could take me 2.5 hours in the middle of the day. But if there was high-speed rail or something, you know, and maybe that's not the best example, but that's an example. But potentially, if we had something like high-speed rail, those cities may seem very close. And then maybe I'm not driving. You know, maybe I am taking a train and then I'm figuring out a local transportation route from there to where I'm going. And Europe does a lot of that, to your point.
You get to your destination, you could get on a bicycle. And it's good, healthy movement for you to make that last kind of mile, if you want to call it that.
So we've talked about maybe what the region needs to do for their next big steps. What are the next big steps for you and your team? What's VHB's future post-2025? Where are you guys trying to go and grow?
Yeah, well, we're pushing, like I said earlier, our strategic plan brings us to 2028. It's if we do it every 5 years. But we're really pushing transportation. The transportation market is very big in the region, right? So we're looking to push transportation services from VHB here in the New York, New Jersey area, as well as growing out some of our services in New Jersey and in Long Island, right? Those are good areas for us to grow. There's lots of good, unique, different work out in those areas. And we do work around the coasts and the coastlines. So we call it coastal resiliency and engineering. So we see that there's a lot of work and protection that's required in the region around our coastal waterways and to protect them and shore them up. And like I said earlier, we see a future of moving, at the very least, goods around by water. So there could be a little uptick in coastal bulkheads and combining it with housing and commercial aspects, right, around our waterfronts that we used to have those, if you remember, a lot of piers and moving things that way for many years. And then they all went to disarray and were abandoned, but they're coming back now. So that's an area of growth that we're looking at. And like many of our clients are looking for program management services, Eric, or consultancy services, and that's something that VHB does as well and does very well in different markets. From a transportation market, it's your program management, construction management, or being extension staff. So our clients are going to ask for more of that as their kind of people start to retire and they don't rehire, right? We're seeing that already. So that's an area as well. And then just more housing. Where's everybody going to live? There's a lot of open space in New Jersey still. We all know that, and even some on Long Island, but the rest of the area is pretty densely populated. So what are we going to do, and how can we help make a difference?
Yeah, housing is a challenge in this region, for sure. I'm going to pivot, because I always like to ask at least one question for the next generation. So what is some advice you have for the next generation of like AEC leaders?
I think you got to figure out just getting us around this tri-state area better than we do today. That's for sure, right? Energy is a big thing that's on my mind. What type of energy can we use or harness differently? There's a lot of talk about moving to non-fossil fuels. But when you do that, is there really enough energy to power the tri-state area? What's the next generation of energy? Is it battery storage? Is it thermal storage, right? Is it hydrogen? Those are things that I'm telling my kids to at least look into or get involved with, or even just engineers that are in school or thinking about it, right? That's the message that I'm saying, Eric. And then making sure our drinking water stays at the really good levels that they are, being protected upstate and all that stuff. So those are things that I would tell the next generation. Transportation and energy are really the key and part and parcel with each other.
Do you have a quote or a mantra you like subscribe to that you want to share with maybe the next generation or even us?
I don't think it's really anyone's and it's not mine either, but I prescribe to every day is a new day, right? What you did yesterday, you can't fix. You can only make today better. And you need to wake up every day in a positive way and be positive, because our world is very different than it was 20, 30 years ago. So just being positive and having a clean slate mindset every day just brings so much joy and happiness to what you're doing. That's what I prescribe to.
I love it. It's like any good hitter, right?
That's it.
You can't remember the last pitch.
That's it. You dial your last pitch. This pitch that's coming at me, I'm going to either hit it out of the park or get a base hit.
To just your mindset about positivity, I think it's so important. I subscribe to that as well. And that's, it's not to be ignorant or arrogant or anything like that, right? Like bad things may happen, but it's what is your approach to the solution going to be? And is it going to come from a positive mindset, or is it going to come from maybe a different place where it won't be as collaborative or solutions oriented, or really won't get you to where you want to go based on the circumstances you have in front of you? So I love that. I think positivity is such an important trait for everybody, right? In any walk of life, doing anything.
No, it makes a huge difference when you're positive. And then I'll take it a step further. When you are in a negative situation or you have some conflict, to find some common ground. And for both sides, because if you can come with a common ground solution that people are going to rally around, all the negativity goes away. And then it's just positive after that, Eric.
I'm pretty sure it's one of the seven habits, right? Seven habits of highly effective people is find win-win situations. And we're always trying to do that. Joe, this was great. Before I let you go, I am going to do our lightning round. So I've got some quick hitter questions for you. You mentioned you like to go to Europe, so I assume this will be somewhere in that vein, but what's your favorite vacation spot?
Anywhere in Italy.
Yeah, all right, cool. Italy is nice. Do you have a productivity hack you swear by?
A productivity hack? Give me an example.
I don't know if it counts as a hack, and this is probably not good, but I'm going to share is my inbox to like manage my like tasks to a certain extent.
I flag most important emails, so I'm similar. So that's how I'm productive. And things that are flagged, I come back to and resolve right away. Other things I don't. I just, you know, not that I let them go, but they're not as important. Somebody taught me this. I have three buckets that things go into: things that I must do, things that I would like to do, and things that I'm not going to do. So I kind of put things in those three buckets.
Very fair. Yep. And then, are you a reader, Joe?
Sometimes.
I'll give you two questions here. You can answer either one or both if you want. One is the best piece of career advice you ever received. And then the other one is one book everyone should read.
Best piece of career advice I ever received was from a client of mine. And we had secured the next phase of a large program. The client told me, they said, Joe, the last phase, everything had to go through you, right? You're kind of a bottleneck. So this phase is four times as big. You better get some good people behind you and delegate and let go. And I said, yes, sir. And that opened my eyes to delegation and trust after that. So it took a client, and that was the best piece of advice that they gave me. And then to me, kind of one of the best, I mean, there's a couple books for me, but I really like Being an Engineer. I like this book. I can't remember the author right now, but it's called Conquering Gotham is the name.
Okay, cool.
It's when the Pennsylvania Railroad built the Hudson River or North River tunnels, the original ones, Penn Station, the tunnels under the East River out to Long Island, Sunnyside Yard, and then the Hellgate Bridge going up to Westchester. It's a really good book if you like history and engineering, just how things come together. I would recommend it for sure. I've read it about five times, and I've given it out as gifts to other people that I'm close with and colleagues. So Conquering Gotham is a really good book.
I love that. And that is not one I've read, but I love the history of New York City and especially infrastructure and transportation. So I'm gonna have to check that one out.
I'm really big on sometimes historical fiction. And I like a lot of things with strategy and how you pull lots of people together to accomplish something. So I'm into a lot of war movies and things like that, but I don't look at it from a war standpoint. I look at it from a strategy and leadership standpoint, and that kind of helps you in your leadership as you're trying to get everyone together, get out a message, right? Put a strategic plan together and have everyone on the same page.
You have an example of one of those?
Well, I love Band of Brothers. I read the book a couple times, watched the miniseries several times. Yeah.
It's a classic.
It's a classic. Yeah. That's leadership there really well. So minus all the killing, obviously.
Joe, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day. I know how busy it is. And on show days, one of my gratitudes is always to the guests. I didn't remember to do that earlier, but I'm remembering to do it now. So thank you for being on. Learned a lot about you. It's one of the things I love about doing this is even people that I know, I learn a lot more about. I hope you enjoyed it. Do you have any final thoughts you want to share before we sign off?
I'm very thankful and grateful to be on this with you. I really like to do these things and share and help others and passionate about what I do. So let's keep it going. Let's leave a legacy behind us.
I love that. Yeah. And hopefully we're inspiring some of the next generation. I shared with you before we started filming, but I've had some great mentors and I'm really fortunate for that. And hopefully through the show, some other people are getting some level of mentorship or guidance or something that's going to inspire them to be the next generation of leaders. So with that, that's all the time we have for today. We'll include links to any of the resources we mentioned in today's show notes. And thanks again for listening and keep an eye out for our next episode. Thanks again, Joe.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Building Better Futures. The show notes include links to any resources mentioned in today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.